Again, I'm Maurice, and I'll be leading on the discussion on promoting medication therapy management for at-risk populations, lessons learned from the Learning Collaborative implementing pharmacy-supported interventions in federally qualified health centers. And I'd like to acknowledge my team, Brenda Leith, who was the lead for the project, as well as the facilitator, and Russ Martin, who was our evaluator. And again, I have no disclosures, and this is my opinions are not related to Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality. So why medication therapy management? As Shannon was saying, the ARC was very interested in picking high priority areas, and after looking through our exchange, we realized that MTM, I'll continue to say medication therapy management and just say MTM, but MTM is a big topic in the area. It costs the health system about $175 billion when looking at community pharmacies. Complications of medication use among patients comes back and costs the system a lot. And the Medicare Payment Advisory Commission indicated that involving pharmacists in patient care has resulted in reduced drug errors and associated morbidities, improved patient outcomes, and reduced costs. So what exactly is medication therapy management? In a sense, it's providing comprehensive medication care to patients, making sure that you do medication reviews and involve other types of services. Looking at the Innovations Exchange, we identified Dr. Aisha Morris's MyRx intervention, in which she had identified four evidence-based interventions to provide this care, including the medication reviews, health education to improve health literacy, health counseling using motivational interviewing, and follow-up calls at scheduled intervals. A little context on her, on this profile. You can, if you go to the website, Innovations Exchange, and look on the landing page for MTM, you'll see this innovation being highlighted. But the essence, a little context about this innovation was that they went into the residences of individuals in the Houston area and focused on adherence to blood pressure among seniors and going into their homes, and then also providing additional education besides the reviews of their medication. So looking at that, we knew that there was a relationship that she had with the Spring Branch Community Health Centers, and looking at, talking a little bit about Spring Branch, they are a FQHC located in the West Houston area. They have three clinics, which serve about 20,000 patients, and a majority of the population is low-income Hispanics, in which about half of them are at 200% or less of the federal poverty level. And what Spring Branch identified as an opportunity for quality improvement was looking at their uncontrolled diabetes population. Looking at 2 years of data, they realized about 44 to 48% of their patients had uncontrolled diabetes, in which about 200 of their patients in 2014 had levels above 8%. And if anyone knows anything about for diabetics controlling their A1C, they're usually looking to be about 7% or less. And a normal range is up to about 5.6%. So 8% is really high, thinking about it. And again, the majority of the population were predominantly Hispanic population whose primary language was Spanish. They had indications of low literacy levels, and many of them were self-paying individuals. They were working, did not qualify necessarily for Medicaid, but were working individuals. And so there were a lot of self-pay at this as well, so that was another challenge. And so there were a lot of social service needs as well. So we were looking to adapt Dr. Aisha Morris's innovation of the MyRx and apply that in an ambulatory care setting with these three facets added, which was integrating the pharmacist into the interprofessional care team, making sure that that pharmacist worked with the physicians and the nurses at the practice to making sure that they were a team. And with that, modifying the clinic workflow. And so the idea behind this was to make sure when a patient was scheduling their visit to a primary care visit, they would then have a added bonus of seeing this pharmacist after their visit with the physician. And then there was the interprofessional communication in which after that visit with the patient, the pharmacist would follow up with the physician and know what was discussed. And if there were any recommendations for changes, discussing that with the physician with the intention of that being accepted. And we call these huddles. I'm gonna skip this slide and come back to it. And so with this, we thought that it would make sense to not just have Spring Branch be the lead of this intervention, but to also involve other like-minded clinics, ambulatory care settings involved in this in this learning community. We thought that having these individuals will help augment the lessons learned from their experiences and make sure and provide other knowledge and expertise that we can leverage in helping with this quality improvement initiative. So with that, we involved, we currently have 17 organizations in total in the learning community. And you can see a breakdown of the type of organizations involved. So four qualified health centers, two charity clinics, one charity clinic, two charity pharmacies, sorry. Some hospital networks, academic-based practices, and academic institution. And so the idea, and just to give a little more context on this, half of the organizations are Houston-based, and the other half are around the nation. We have individuals from Montgomery County of Maryland. We have some folks in Indianapolis. We have some folks in Appalachian area. So this gives us a little more broad context of what all of these individuals are interested in MTM and applying these in ambulatory care settings. So with that, the learning community came together to have three aims. Before I continue on that. So with this, we also thought, we're going to leverage this expertise. We had the sites that were implementing, but we also had some of the individuals that were involved in the learning community were looking to adapt the MyRxs as well. So they didn't commit to implementing, but they were close. And then we had others who were also interested in doing MTM, or were more just observers, but also providing context and education and knowledge to the team. So we came together to have three aims. One was to pilot test the medication therapy management innovation in three FQHC settings, to improve medication adherence among patients with uncontrolled diabetes, and then to prevent and reduce potential medication-related errors prior to discharge from the clinic visit. And that's with those huddles. To give some ideas of the structure of our learning community, we had our project lead, which was in Census ARC. We had our champion, which was Dr. Aisha Morris Moultrie, and she was helped by her two co-leads, Dr. Portia Davis and Dr. Uche Nado Indefo. And they together they worked from Texas Southern University, and they provided the context for helping with the innovation being applied at Spring Branch Community Health Center. We had our facilitator, which was Brenda Leith, and she provided the leadership of guiding the LC meetings and making sure that we had the process and structure for monitoring the implementation. Myself as a knowledge integrator, looking through our, collaborating with our members, making sure that we were addressing their lessons, addressing their needs, their learning needs, and seeing what were some strategies that they were looking to identify to help with the implementation, as well as gathering any other knowledge and expertise versus solving those challenges. And we had a community coordinators and communications assistant to help with the logistics of the LC. We had newsletters, monthly communications, our monthly meetings, the intermediate meetings, as Shannon was talking. A lot of coordination and getting people together to speak and gather and making sure those schedules align to do that. We also had a core team in which we had involved the champion and our co-leads, but also stakeholders from the learning community who couldn't necessarily commit beyond, they could commit more than just coming to our monthly meetings and providing knowledge, but also providing strategic planning and knowledge for our meetings. So they helped with the meeting agendas, helping us make sure that our meeting topics were on the core of what they thought the membership wanted to continue learning about. So this just gives a brief time snapshot of our milestones since implementation last year. As you can see, we started our recruitment in September of last year. The LC launched the following month. And then we had our meeting in January to sign our charter. The charter, in a sense, was a way of lining up our goals for the year and making sure that everyone was in agreement with that, our mission. And then we started the kickoff of this, of the pilot in February at one of the three clinics, with the idea that we wanted to do a soft rollout, see if there were any things that were missing with the implementation, and then fully implement in April. And we also had our in-person meeting, which all of us came together in this past month in September, in which we all came together to talk about our lessons learned and our experiences. So just some ideas and some context of what was discussed during these meetings throughout the year. One of the big things was about return on investment and strategies for sustaining the MTM within ambulatory care settings. How do you build a business case for adding this into your center and making sure that there is buy-in to keep this going, and how do you fund it? how do you collaborate with other entities in your community to help with the facilitation? You know, it's not just one clinic, you know, especially in the area like West Houston, which has so many social barriers. How can you work with other community organizations to help alleviate some of these barriers and make sure that people are able to get into the clinics? Preparing your organization for something like this. So once you get the model, once you build the business case and you get people going, how do you change the culture within your organization so that everyone's bought in and understands how the flow is going to work and that the pharmacist is integral to that care team? And then delivery of MTM services among various populations. So does this, we focused on diabetes, but how can we apply this to other type of conditions and types of patients? Does this only, you know, again, we're focusing on a majority Hispanic population focused on diabetes, but would this work in a population that was for pediatrics and asthma? Would it work for other heart diseases? So how can we apply this in other conditions? And then strategies for recruiting and engaging patients. And this was the big factor that was experienced, that was discussed all the time, every meeting. How do we get them in the door? And how do we keep them coming to the door? And how do we get the buy-in? How do we reduce those barriers to care? How do we pitch that this is something that is value up to the team, to that patient, and that patient buys in? And so these were some of the major topics, and we had our meetings focus on this, either through looking through the Innovations Exchange and seeing if we had potential speakers to talk about this, or we're looking at our expertise within our community ourselves and just sharing our lessons learned. So we had other clinics talk about their challenges and what they've done to experience that. So, for example, one of the things we talked about with the strategies for engaging patients is how do you follow up with a patient's visit? You get them on the books, but you know that then they may not come. What can we do? Phone calls sometimes work, but those numbers may not work. Maybe having text messages, automatic text messages that come in, having an agreement that if you come in, you get a prize. You know, what can you do? And talk about those throughout fully. So with that, I just want to go lead into, so with the pilot, there were some challenges experienced. Again, this is the Care Delivery Quality Improvement Initiative, which is a little bit different from what Shannon was talking about, which is more of a systems-wide thing. This was actually delivering care to patients in a FQHC. So some of the things that we experienced, which I'm sure many of you are experiencing when you work in this type of setting, staff turnover and attrition. The quality improvement advocate, I would say, that was at Spring Branch actually left before the implementation started. And so finding the person to be our next contact who had a much pull and buy-in to help us with this initiative at Spring Branch was something we experienced. Also, the medical director at Spring Branch left in the middle of the intervention. And so that another champion at that organization who had bought in and was in this, who was involved, had left in the middle. So then keeping that culture going and keeping the organization involved was a little challenging throughout the implementation. Again, barriers to care among the patient population. Again, one of the things experienced, because there was a working population, them coming to the clinic would mean that they would miss out on work that day because they were hourly for the most part. And so trying to adjust that was huge. We had a huge no-show rate, so even though they would sign up and say they could come, they just couldn't make it. They couldn't get couldn't get excused absences from their jobs, or they just couldn't make it. Also, childcare was a huge challenge for some of our patients as well. And then adoption of the model in the ambulatory care setting. Again, the original model was within the residences of the patients. This is having people coming into a clinic, and then involving that pharmacist, as opposed to a pharmacist coming to a home, having a pharmacist have an actual workspace in the pharmacy, in the clinic, and being there at the time. So the way we started this was that we had part-time pharmacists because we wanted to, you know, roll it out and make sure that it would work before you go fully into having a full-time pharmacist. But with that, aligning the pharmacist schedule with the clinic and making sure that they can, because again, we were trying to make sure the primary care visit lined up with the pharmacist time. But if the pharmacist does not align, if the pharmacist has to work at their primary job most of the time, it doesn't necessarily fit with the patient's schedule, how do you adjust for that? How can we make sure that they come in a little bit earlier? How do we make them roll? You know, these are some things we had to experience. And then data collection. Again, Spring Branch had their own EHR system, and this was them adding this, well, not EHR, but their own HIT system, and having this adding into their workflow wasn't necessarily the intention of their electronic system. So how do you get the data, sharing the lessons from the pharmacist into their records? We ended up having to scan it into it and adding it to the chart, but it wasn't something that you could naturally pull. So the extraction of data was harder as well. Again, and then talking from the LC perspective, challenges with operating and working with our LC, one of the things that many of our LC members are actual care delivery individuals themselves, pharmacists, and so they had to balance membership, this coming to these meetings on a voluntary basis, with delivering patient care to their patients. And it was just a challenge. Many times they would want to come to a meeting and say, I still have a patient I'm working with, I can't make this meeting. And so trying to get a time that worked for a lot of, for about, say, 17 stakeholders is just very hard. And then with them, they had their own turnover. So they would leave their organization, and then who was going to take the place? Who, if they were the champion and they didn't have anyone else from that organization to step in, how do you get that organization, how do you keep the organization involved? So despite those challenges, Spring Branch was still successful in recruiting 57 patients during a 6-month pilot, and conducting the follow-up. And from the follow-ups, and so the structure that, so talked about this earlier, but the structure of the pilot is that you have them coming for that first visit with the pharmacist, and then they had 6 to 8 weeks of follow-up phone calls with that patient, discussing various topics that was really patient-centric. So if it was about diet, talking about their medication regimen, talking about, you know, other concerns, cultural issues that they were having. Also, the pharmacist involved in this intervention work, bilingual pharmacists. That was one of the biggest things with the recruitment, because we wanted to make sure that they can speak directly to the patient and understand their cultural needs and address them. So through that, we were able to recruit 57 patients, and early indications, we're still collecting the data, but it's showing the promise that there has been a decrease in A1C among those who have had their follow-up visits. And more of that, we'll have final information on that data in March when the entire implementation is done. But preliminary, we can see that the A1Cs have decreased. And also something that we weren't looking for intentionally, but through looking at patients' records, we have also identified that weight has decreased among this patient population as well, for those who had their follow-up visits. So lessons learned. The first one is a topic that was, and that's also addressed when we talk about sustainability of this intervention, is that pharmacist provider status can impact their ability to receive reimbursement for this type of services, especially in the ambulatory care setting right now. Also, having the absence of a dedicated full-time pharmacist can pose scheduling challenges, which can be able to burden the patients and return on clinics with those visits. And then again, as I mentioned earlier, the dedicated workspace for that pharmacist while they're there, making sure that they can work in a safe environment with that patient, a secure environment in which the patient can feel freely to talk. You know, you don't want to do these things in a lobby. You want to have a room dedicated you can have a nice consultation. Academic institutions and publicly funded community organizations can be a bridge to resource gaps in the population and working with that. So while we had these pharmacists being part-time, TSU was able to use their pharmacy resident students to help with the implementation, or help with the follow-up call. So while the pharmacists could not conduct those themselves, the residency students were trained on the interventionists themselves, and they conducted some of the follow-up calls and follow-up phone calls with the patients, providing that education. So using that service, you know, the clinic may not be able to pay for those services directly, but having volunteers, or not volunteers, but those who are on their rounds as pharmacy residents provide that care is a possible solution. And then behavioral care strategies are critical to achieving sustainable improvements in medication adherence. So one of the key things that was learned from this experience is that the patients know that they have controlled diabetes. They know what they should be doing, but it's just a challenge for them to do it because they just have some of the things were just cultural in their works. One of the things that was discussed was for a certain population, they like to have a Coke and a sweetbread after a meal, and that's just how they do things. And so if you're going to do that, that's definitely going to put a spike in your A1C. And so the pharmacist being able to understand that and know that that is a cultural thing that does take place, and trying to provide some solutions, saying that, well, maybe you can have a Diet Coke, or maybe you can, you know, just take half of that sweetbread. You know, I'm not going to tell you to stop doing it, and make slow-paced intervention that, and definitely understand the situation that the patients are working in. As far as LC membership, in order to keep them engaged, you need to make sure that you align their goals of everyone and make sure that you can involve multiple stakeholders per organization involved in the LC, so that if one person doesn't move on, you do have a replacement who can be there ready to step in and understand how to carry on the work. And then the in-person meeting, one of the things that we realized is that we wish we had done the in-person meeting a little bit earlier, because that is the best way to really have foster networking and trust among an LC group. It's one thing to have a bunch of people. Again, we had stakeholders who were not everyone was in the Houston area. So coming on a phone call, not necessarily really knowing everybody and speaking freely about your circumstances is not as welcoming unless you really could put a face to that and be in a room and learn from each other and build trust. And so we learned from the in-person meeting that a lot of camaraderie happened there and really fostered this improvement in how the LC is going to work. So next steps for the MTMLC, the first three bullets are pretty much the same. We're going to continue monitoring the MIRX pilot, improve medication, looking to improve medication adherence among our patients, and then prevent and reduce potential medication-related errors. But this fourth bullet is a strong focus. It was something that was part of the first year, but we're really looking to push on this year, is leverage the expertise and knowledge of the MTMLC members and involve other guest speakers as needed to help with improving future MIRX implementations in other settings. So again, how do we address these barriers to care? How do we foster these relationships with other community providers? And using the expertise that we have in our LC, as well as the innovations exchange to identify those strategies, is what we're focusing on this next year. Thank you.